You're listening to Prem Chat with Dave O'Grady, the Premier League show by the fans for the fans. If you want to get involved with the programme, advertise with us, or simply chat, drop us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Talk to you soon. You're very welcome along to the final Prem Chat show of the season. I'm Dave O'Grady. Man City are champions. Wolves, Blackburn and Bolton are gone. We're going to miss them. About 4 months ago, I spoke to Sunderland fans right here on the Prem Chat show and I promised I would chat to them again by the end of the season. And here I am. I'm delighted to be joined by Michael Graham. And Michael, you're very much involved with the Rooker Report Forum. It's a great website with a fans forum and a fans podcast. It's gone strong. It's one of the most popular podcasts, not just in the UK, but around the world from what I'm seeing on Podomatic and that.
It's actually been like amazing how much it's actually started. I mean, we just really started that as, you know, just something to do to see how it went. But we found like we've had teams from all sorts, fans from all sorts of teams, really, really interested in it. So something that we're very, very pleased with, yeah.
What is it that's unique about it, Michael? Is it the fact that, you know, you have Sunderland fans on and they're just giving their own opinions? There's no hidden agendas in that, because I know we do tend to, from a lot of Premier League fans that I speak to, they do talk about the hidden agendas by a lot of the well-known media outlets.
To be honest, I mean, what I like to think of it as, it's just, you know, it's just the way that we would speak to each other if we were just mates in a pub, you know, just, you know, a little bit of crack, taking the like a mick out of each other and ourselves, and it's just, I think it's the like humor of it, and it's extremely relaxed.
And you know, the articles, you guys have some pretty good articles up on the website as well, and no doubt there's a good popularity there because of the way they're written. I guess you're capturing a lot of what the fans are thinking.
Well, that's what we obviously set out to actually do. Yeah, I think it's important when you're doing just one club, you've really got to get a like hold of the fans and get a hold of the way that they actually see it. So I would hope that that's what we do. It's certainly good to hear you say that. Yeah.
And you're a busy man yourself, Michael. I know you write for a site called Footy Place and you do some stuff for Team Talk too. That must keep you on your feet. I tried this, a little bit of this writing lark, and you know, I know a couple of blogs, well-known blogs, have been asking me to do a bit of writing, but I no doubt it's hard enough to find the time.
It's very hard to find time. I mean, and I've got a new son in the like house too.
Yeah.
And you know, that takes a lot of time. And but you know, it's, I think it's something, you know, it's the old saying that if you find something that you love, you'll never work ever like in your life. Because to be honest, it's something that I would do, you know.
Yeah,
just for fun, you know. Yeah. It's I can't really moan about it.
Oh, well, that's what you want. I know a lot of people that they say when they kind of do, they might have their full time job, and then when they do a little bit of media stuff or that, they call it playtime. So I guess
exactly, yeah,
that's the right way to be. Now, this is kind of funny how you got to become a Sunderland fan. Would I be right by saying you were actually born and bred and or actually brought up in Newcastle?
I was, yeah. I was born in the right place, obviously.
Yeah.
Sunderland. But then I found that, you know, my daddy was one of these types who likes to move around. He moves around for different jobs. When I first got into the sport, I was actually living down south. And I actually wanted to support a Man United.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all my friends did. My dad, he dragged me, literally dragged me into the car, drove 300 miles north. And then the next day I was sat watching Sunderland in the third tier that we were then. It was 1987. And then we eventually moved back up north, but we moved to the like dark side. And of course, by then I was well set that these were my club, and the Geordies used to give me a lot of grief.
I can imagine so, yeah. Because, you know, going in school, no doubt that would have been very tough, because your allegiances would have, all their allegiances would have been, of course, to Newcastle, the dominating club, no doubt, throughout the years when you were growing up. And for yourself to be an old Sunderland fan, it must have been quite difficult.
Well, you know, it was unlucky, really, because When I moved there, they were extremely bad for about a month. And then Keegan turned up for the first time. So obviously they went massively up and started to look to win things. And we were like really, really low down. And from that point of view, it was certainly difficult. But I've got to say, I wouldn't have actually altered it for anything. It was just great fun. And, you know, I'm the type, I love to give. You know, if someone gives me a bit of stick, I'll just give it straight back. And I found that the thick skin that I have now, which, you know, you need to have if you're going to write, and especially about, you know, a sport which everyone has a sort of like view on as this, you've got to have that like a thick skin, and I owe mine to my Geordie friends.
Yeah, and one of the things that is unique about Sunderland, and I speak to a lot of fans all over England, and Sunderland does have fans that aren't just, as you said, I know you spent a bit of time further south of that, and there is a loyalty there. There's a strong loyalty, and no doubt there is a lot of fans still driving up from down south to go to a lot of the games. That's something that maybe not all the teams have.
Well, I mean, it's a thing that the club and fans at Sunderland have an amazing bond. I mean, I know everyone, you'll talk to fans of, you know, of all clubs, and they'll come on and they'll say how special their, you know, their specific team is and all this. But, you know, I mean, Sunderland, I think that there was a stat that I heard that Sunderland had the best average gate in Europe of every team who hadn't been in Europe for 60 years or something. You know, and Sunderland, you know, I mean, the fans, it's, you know, we get a lot of stick. You know, we always have done, because, you know, we are very, very vocal. When things don't go well, we voice it. But, you know, you really, really can't fault them. To be honest, I never think that the Sunderland fans get enough praise, if I'm perfectly honest, because there's been some grim times, some really grim times.
Well, one man who has praised you guys was, of course, Niall Quinn, who was chairman of the club for right up to, I suppose, the start of the season when he took another role, and now he's kind of out of that. But he always paid tribute to Sunderland fans, including, I know he didn't pay for tickets or transport to one of the games or that as a reward. And it's good to see a club where the board and the chairman, owners and that are kind of on the same wavelength as the fans. We don't see too much of that in the Premier League these days.
No, absolutely. I mean, the great thing about Quinn and just what actually happened was a few Sunderland fans got kicked off their flight home one day, and Niall Quinn, who was also on the flight, said, you know, you can't treat them in this way. And he got up and he walked off, and then he paid for them all to go home. And I think this was like a 300, 400 mile a trip home, you know. It must have cost an absolute fortune. But I mean, Niall Quinn, you know, I mean, the first time that he really noticed the fans, and it was the fans which really got him hooked on us, was I think it was 1991, Main Road, the final day of the season. We actually went down. Man City beat us to actually go down. Quinn scored most of the goals. But I think there were 14,000 Sunderland fans.
Yeah,
like in Main Road that day, and I think he just thought, you know, these lads are absolutely mental,
and that's what got him hooked, or that kind of thing. And one also, I suppose, to pay tribute to Niall was during the time when I think Roy Keane was in charge, when things were going really well, he was always optimistic, if not a little bit overly optimistic, Michael, in the sense that he was talking Champions League, and that, did fans think that was a little bit too far fetched?
You know, yes, we did, is a very short answer. But Niall Quinn, he's one of these speakers, isn't he? Is that when he speaks, you listen and you buy what he actually says.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, when he actually bought us, we were that low, and it was going to take someone special to really like shake us out of that. And actually, Niall Quinn took it a certain way, but also needed Keane. And I know that Roy Keane, you know, Sunderland fans, I don't think fully give him enough for what he actually did, because he really, really shook us out of it. without Keane, I don't think that Quinn could have done what he actually did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things we were discussing earlier in the season, when things weren't quite going Sunderland's way and Martin O'Neill had just taken the job and things looked to be going up, but it's been one hell of a topsy-turvy season for Sunderland. I mean, you couldn't, if you had sat down at the start of the season and tried to write the script, Michael, you just wouldn't have been able to. It's been really all over the place, especially like looking firstly, I suppose, at Steve Bruce when he was in charge. It didn't start well, I don't think.
No, I think that, you know, hopes were high. I think that we all looked at who had signed in the summer. We were looking at it thinking, you know, this is going to be good, this is okay. And then it never really got started. It never got started. And then, you know, you don't win games and that goes on and then you're sinking further down, and then the fans, I think that the fans are just really had enough. I mean, a lot of things were said about the fans when he was sacked. But I mean, what I think people don't realise, that the fans at that point had seen 3 home wins in a whole year. You know, it wasn't just something which happened this season. It was a long-running thing. And if you bear in mind that these are fans who've paid, you know, £400 for that year, you know, it's a lot to, like, spend on just, like, 3 wins.
Yeah. Was it risky, Michael, sacking Steve Bruce at the time you guys did? Because for a lot of Premier League clubs, that can be a bit of a problem, especially we've seen what happened to Wolves, and Terry Connor never picked up a win, but I guess when you're bringing in a manager like Martin O'Neill, he always seems to get this unbelievable rise from the players. Players that you think are just, that you think might just be amateur players, they seem to be playing out of their skin.
Well, I mean, I think it was the absolute perfect time, because there was like O'Neill actually out there, and like also Hughes at the like time too. I mean, you like mentioned Wolves there. I think that Wolves maybe left it a little bit too late, in the sense that, you know, by the time that they sacked their guy, you know, there wasn't really anyone out.
Yeah,
there wasn't really anyone out there who could come in. So I think that, you know, I think that they actually got it spot on when they actually did it.
Yeah, because don't a lot of clubs, Michael, have a manager lined up usually before they actually sack the running manager? But I guess in Wolves' case, and I don't like to poke fun at a club that's going down, you know, they had a very difficult season in fairness, but in Wolves' case, they sacked Mick McCarthy and they gave the job to the assistant at probably, as you said, the worst possible time. And they never had a big name manager lined up, unlike Sunderland did when they let Steve Bruce go.
Absolutely. I mean, Wolves, I mean, if we're, you know, just talk about them for a small amount of time. I mean, what I think about Wolves did, they didn't actually bring a new voice in. They took one away. That's all that they actually did. I mean, the man that they ended up with, his voice was always there, his ideas were always there. So I mean, they didn't actually bring anyone with fresh ideas in. They just took someone, they took a like leader out of it, and, you know, they never had a hope as soon as they actually did that.
Yeah, and the second half of the season, you know, for Sunderland, I know there was a couple of defeats, but the majority of it, I guess we have to say, Michael, it was pretty good. Under O'Neill, we've seen the emergence of James McLean, Sessegnon playing some great stuff, Bentner getting a couple of goals, and that the outstanding performances of Mignolet in goals. It really, there was something, what was it about the team? They just seemed to be playing together, and individuals were really stepping up to the mark at the same time.
If I knew that, then I would be in sort of like his job rather than speaking to AU, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it really was about that little spell just after he started, and I think that the whole club, including the fans, just felt like they could beat anyone, and we had goals which were flying in from every angle, and I think that what it was in the first place is that in the first part of the season, we looked a lot worse than we actually were. And then we stepped up from that and started to play much better than we actually were. So, you know, teams didn't really know what we actually could do. And then towards the end of the season, again, people started to really work out what we were going to do. So next season, I think, is going to be a big thing to see if we can give them something new.
Has Martin O'Neill created a squad, Michael, that has a almost like a perfect balance between youth and experience? Because I know we've seen, I know John O'Shea was brought in early season under Brucer that, but at the same time, his role, and he was playing in central defence as well, he's really kind of grown in and he's captained the side as well. And, you know, you have the likes of Sessegnon, you have Colback and that, playing some really good stuff, in fairness. There's a good mix there between youth and experience, I think.
I would say that that's absolutely spot on, and I would say that we've got a very good core of the squad. What I would say is that there's not really many people who really like stand out. You know, there's not really anyone who you would look at the like squad and think that they're going to win your games. And McLean maybe, and certainly Sessegnon, but aside from that, they're all sort of like one-paced, good players. But there's not really a match winners in there, is there?
I suppose not, in the sense that with the last time I was speaking to Sunderland fans, I'll put this to you, Michael. A lot of people were saying, they were talking about Jordan Henderson and going to Liverpool, and that seems to be a problem with the club, a problem that the club has faced over the past few years, where when a player develops and maybe coming through the youth academy or something like that, they'll as soon as the big club starts sniffing around, they'll be gone. But what we have seen through O'Neill had that squad, I suppose, at Aston Villa, where he had a midfield of James Milner, Gareth Barry, Ashley Young, Stuart Downing, and then Egbon Lahore and Darren Bent or that up front. And to have all those players, it was always going to be hard to keep them at Villa. Do you think he's going to have a couple of problems now with Sunderland and keeping some of your good players, the likes of Sessegnon, James McLean, as you mentioned?
I think certainly we will do, yeah. And I don't think it's because of the big club kind of thing. I think it's because of the fact of these new financial rules, which mean that, you know, we can only now spend what we actually make. And I think that Henderson leaving last summer, that was the big thing with that. We needed to actually invest, and the owner couldn't really do it anymore. So we needed to raise our own money. I think it'll be extremely interesting, because I don't think that like O'Neill has come here to sell. And I think that like Ellis Short is going to have to do something to maybe put in a little bit more than he wants to or feels that he can in order to keep him actually happy. But I think that for all the clubs in that kind of like middle bit and of the league, it's very hard to keep hold of your top players.
Now, we're also joined on the line by Jim Fox. Jim, welcome to the show. We were speaking there to Michael, and Michael was just saying about Martin O'Neill will certainly need to strengthen coming into the summer. And I put it to him that it might be difficult to hold on to one or two players, like similar problems that O'Neill has had at Villa when he had the midfield of Ashley Young, Gareth Barry, James Milner and Stuart Dowling all at the one time. Could you see O'Neill facing similar problems?
Well, the main worry is that Stefan Sessegnon will be the subject of an offer that's, however reluctant we are to release them, that, you know, an offer will come in from somewhere that's sufficiently attractive or sufficiently hard to resist, either just in pure financial terms, or it'll give them a war chest, you know, to go and buy to. Maybe two, maybe three players, you know, which will improve the overall quality. We're hoping he'll stay, obviously, you know, because he's been terrific for us this season. He's making noises to indicate that he's going to stay, you know, at least for next season. So, but, you know, I mean, the pressure, I don't think we're under pressure to sell him, but, you know, obviously nobody knows how much money the owner's going to give him to spend, but I think, as everybody knows, you know, from the goal scoring problems in the last 12, 13 games of the season, he needs at least two strikers, you know. Harking back to the departure of Mr. Bent to that hugely successful season at Aston Villa. although I suppose Bent's injury will be attributed to to their demise this season. And of course, there's still, even at this point, the bizarre Asamoah Gyan situation, you know, which is very hard to, well, apart from pure finance terms, very hard to understand.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess on a positive note, Jim, the current Sunderland squad, I mean, they have at the moment, obviously, there's a lot of players being called up for international duty, including, you know, playing in a European Championships. And we see the likes of, obviously, you have all the Irish lads that are going to be going to the Euros. And then you have players like Mignolet, Sessegnon, David Vaughan, and even Jordan Watson receiving international call-ups. I guess it's great to have a team with so much international experience.
It is, you know, provided you can carry the look with the tiredness and the injuries and, you know, and all that stuff. Not such a problem, you know, then, but it can be with... we were lucky with Sessegnon this year because Benin didn't qualify for the African Cup of Nations, which was, you know, I'm sure Sessegnon wasn't happy about that, but it was good for us. That was the one good thing, I suppose, about Jan not being here. Because he'd have been away with Ghana for a while. But you know when you buy these players, you know, it's the same when clubs, Premier League clubs, complain about, you know, South American internationals having to fly back to Peru or Colombia or Argentina. Well, you know, you knew that when you signed him. If he wasn't that status, you wouldn't get a work permit anyway. So, you know, stop complaining about it, you know.
Exactly.
Get on with it.
Yeah, I ought to put that, you know, to Michael. I mean, there's, Jim was mentioning, you know, clubs know about this, you know, international football can be great for the players in one sense, in terms of it's playing a completely different level of the game. It can be a lot harder in that because they're not with the guys 24/7 or that, but for the players that are flying off and that, it'll be, I suppose, an overall positive. Would you go along with that, Michael?
I think it's a really good thing for us as a sort of like club that, you know, if we have someone who does go away and do well, especially when all the eyes are like on us, which will be this summer, it can only make the clubs like better and, you know, stronger and bigger and make more people want to actually come. And I think it's a good thing for us as a club. But I, you know, it is right that it can be a pain. It really can be a pain, but, you know, it's just something that the big clubs do. And if we want to be one of them, then something that we need to do too.
And what about the point, Michael, that if some of the players go away and play in the European Championships and really stand out, you can only imagine the interest that's going to be come the end of the summer or come the beginning of next season from the bigger clubs.
That's the really, really bad point about it, isn't it? That could really, really hurt you. But I mean, I think as long as, I mean, we were talking about it slightly earlier, as long as the money's good, and the money helps the club like as a whole, it's a good thing. You know, it's just something that you have to like accept.
Yeah.
Really, but, you know, I mean, I certainly won't whinge if, you know, someone goes away and has an absolutely storming summer. You know, I think it'll be great for us.
Yeah, and would you go along with Jim, Michael, that you guys, regarding the summer signings, you guys need a striker, you need to sort out the striking problems? That should be kind of a bit of a priority, as we've seen there's been problems with, say, the African Cup of Nations, and I know a lot of your guys, obviously Darren Bent when he left or that, and you guys have had a couple of injuries to your striker players.
I think that what we need in the summer is certainly a forward. I think that we need a forward who's going to stay in the box the whole time, always offer a like target in the box. It's, you know, especially when the ball is out wide. And I think that out wide, we need people who can take everyone on, because we don't really have people at the minute. I mean, we've got two, but they're quite easy to really like mark out of the game. If we had someone on the right-hand side as well, who could really like, you know, get like at,
yeah,
like teams, and inject a little bit of pace into it as well. I think that those are the like important areas, without a doubt.
Yeah, Jim, coming to you on players that would have stood out. I was talking to Michael about it, and Michael mentioned we were talking a little bit about Sessegnon, James McLean, and, you know, Mignolet in goals. What kind of players have you been impressed with this year for Sunderland?
Certainly McLean, you know, has made a big impact. And we hope, obviously, that he can keep that going next season. And that's where maybe, you know, a good performance with Ireland in the Euros will help with that. Jack Colback, certainly. I think O'Neill likes him very much. I think a lot of our fans weren't convinced initially, but I think, I mean, you know, what you're going to get with Colback, and it's not spectacular, but he's the sort of player that's very, very necessary to have, and I think he, from the people I speak to, he's won over a lot of doubters with his performances. But I think he's got to play. Obviously, he has played occasionally at fullback, but he's got to play in midfield. And I think that's where he'd be. I think O'Neill likes him very much. I think the rest of the composition of the midfield for next season is obviously open to question. You know, particularly with the Cattermole problem. You know, the Cattermole problem being, you know, suspensions, injuries, and in fact, inconsistency as well.
You're almost, Jim, expecting a couple of suspensions by him already for next season.
Well, it's frustrating, you know, because if you take one game, apart from it, well, the team's overall performance, but the home game against Manchester City on New Year's Day, that was frustrating, because if Cattermole could play more often the way he played that day, or if he could play more often and control his aggression the way he did in the derby, the away derby, when, you know, having been, you know, foolishly booked early on, and everybody thinking he'd be off the pitch, he in fact played, stayed on and played exceptionally well. Yeah. So he can do it, you know, he can put that sort of performance in. But, you know, again, you know, it's whether if the opportunity comes to improve on him, you know, you've always got to look to improve. But, I mean, I'd stick with him myself, but I don't know whether the manager will.
Yeah, all right, lads. And before I let you go, I have to ask you, Michael, what has been your most memorable match for Sunderland this season? Which game has really kind of opened your eyes and made you feel, yes, I love being a Sunderland fan?
I would have to say it was when we beat Stoke away 1-0. It was pouring with snow. And everyone always says, Lionel Messi, can he do it in the rain at Stoke? We went in there in the snow and we beat them.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. That was some game. I think there's always replays on Match of the Day and all shown from that game. It was terrific stuff. What about yourself, Jim? What game has been the standout for you?
The standout game for me, in a kind of bittersweet way, was the Manchester City away game, because we were 5 minutes from beating them, which would have been, you know, nice, and would have took 6 points off them, and we're the only team to take 4 points off them. But it was a standout from the point of view of it showed you what we can be capable of, but also showed the bad side, because it shows the other side of us, because we've mentioned attacking, but certainly, you know, one thing O'Neill have to tighten up is giving away the kind of goals we have been, particularly, you know, to take the winner on Sunday when two centre-backs watch across, sail across the box.
Oh, very difficult to take, yeah.
Tyrone on the back post, who sort of, you know, heads it in apologetically. So, you know, but no, Man City away from me.
Okay, interesting stuff. Well, listen, lads, thanks a million to both Jim and Michael for joining me on the very last Prem Chat show of this season. Big thanks to Tyne FM and all the fans from all the Premier League clubs that we spoke to. I'm Dave O'Grady. I wish you all a very good summer, and we'll pick it up again at the start of next season in August. Thanks a million, lads.
You're welcome.
No bother.